All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Files Law Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. We've got a fantastic broadcast planned. Welcome to our host, Caitlin Files. How are you?
I'm doing well, Joe. I haven't seen you in a while.
Well, you know, I know we're, are we going to be live?
I was about to press the live button.
You could go live.
Okay, great.
And I was just saying, we have a fantastic guest, Ted Levy.
Yeah, I'm glad you have him. I'm glad to be back. Thanks, Joe.
It's great to have you. And like I just said to you, Ted, as the video comes on me now. What's great about it is that it takes you right back to your high school weight. So I'm about 179 right now.
Looking good.
That's what I'm talking about.
I was a wrestler, so I was cutting weight in high school.
Well, it's funny. You were a wrestler?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have a good wrestling story. It doesn't have a happy ending, but it's got kind of a funny ending. So I had a wrestling career. Tell me about yours.
I was a pretty good high school wrestler. I actually was in private school in New Jersey, got third in private school states, wrestled for 2 years, Division III at Johns Hopkins, then gave it up after that.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So my career did not kind of go in that direction. I played high school football as freshman year at Penn Charter. And the coach said to me, look, we need somebody to wrestle. So it's trimesters there. So you have, there's football season, then there's basketball, wrestling, then there's baseball, right? I never wrestled a day in my life. He puts me at 147, right? I was at like three practices and wrestling practice, by the way, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but they make football practice seem like a cakewalk. It's like a really intense, you know, and I knew nothing about it, but we were wrestling our first match and I was the last one to go at 147 pounds. I ended up in a crate. My career was about 48 seconds long.
Oh, yeah, you did tell me this.
And I was in some kind of cradle. You know,
some kind of cradle.
Yeah. And I looking at the lower face up with my lower extremities. Needless to say, I didn't get that call again from Mr. Mellon.
You didn't make the cut after that cradle.
What would have been great... what would have been great is if I could tell you part B, but they have the internet. And part B was what happened was I got beat then. I worked real hard. I became a state champion. I got a full scholarship to Iowa, and I won the Olympic gold medal. But I'm going to lay off for that one because they have the internet and Google, right?
Yeah, you don't have You don't have a Rudy story.
I don't have one.
I was good, but not great. Yeah. I wasn't good enough to like go anywhere high with it. I was good enough to do it in college for a stretch.
But it's a great sport. Yeah. It's a great sport. And now I know why my coach, you know, because he was like, listen, it's a great sport. It'll get you in shape for football and all that. And I'm like, yeah, okay. So anyway, Ted, great to have you back on the program. Caitlin, if you will, remind our listeners, we're live. Normally, we do Caitlin's show on location at different locations up in, you know, the...
Lower Bucks County
region and really cool areas. Will you think we'll ever go back to the Naked Brew Pub?
I was just about to talk to you to a plan for a next one at the Brew Pub.
Where are you from, Caitlin?
I'm from Lower Bucks.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, I grew up in Yardley.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I currently live there. But, yeah, I was nice. Washington Crossing.
Awesome.
Okay, yeah. So you guys
are... Pensbury kid?
I went to private school. I would have been.
What school?
The Pennington School.
Oh, okay. Yep. I went to Village O.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're both basically inner city kids that are,
yeah,
you know.
Tough upbringing.
Yeah.
Rehabilitation projects. We're going to celebrate that right now.
You don't know what the suburbs are like in Lower Bucks County, man.
That's right. Listen, I've been carjacked three or four times right in the middle of Yardley.
Yeah,
right?
Yardley will get you.
Exactly. You're going to get the wrong traffic light.
Yeah.
I joke around sometimes. My wife's cousin, he's a great guy. And he's up in New Hope, right? He's right there, right? You guys are. And I'm like, man, I'll tell you, this is a rough area man. I almost got carjacked. One time I was standing, they got it on video. It was like a holiday party. And I went outside just to get some air. And turns out there were, I don't know what kind of animal it was, a donkey or something like that. It made some kind of noise and it hurt. You could hear me on the ring going, Jesus. You know, because I'm like, it's all kind of, you don't hear that in the inner city, but.
No, you might hear some gunshots. But.
Yeah, well, it depends.
Lots of ambulances.
Well, I'll tell you what we did here during the pandemic, and it was just nuts. I mean, so I live 5 minutes from here in East Falls. So we were hearing these, like, they were blowing up the mailboxes or something like that. Man, every night it was crazy. You know what I said to myself? It's that Ted Levy again.
It was.
Bringing his thugs.
Gotta be.
Bringing his thugs down from Yardley.
The Yardley thugs. Yeah, I took my dog on a walk, and I forgot to close my front door in Yardley, and I was gone for like 45 minutes. And
a
my lack
or chicken?
Of concern when I got back, I was like, oh, shoot, I forgot to close the door.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, yeah, I do love it in Bucks County. It's such a it's a beautiful area. And I really loved it. So Caitlin will tell you that I bring the rain, okay?
You, downpour.
So when we do the show at Caitlin's firm, flat out, she doesn't even have to say it. If it's going to, what's going to happen in December, Caitlin?
It's going to be a blizzard.
It's going to be a blizzard.
It is every time he comes.
That's
it's a hurricane.
Right. I bring it, man.
We like lost power. The storms are so bad. I'm actually concerned about people getting on the road every single time.
As soon as Joe's here, Caitlin's calling her friends, get home early. What do you mean? Well, I'll tell you later. and you see, you bring the sunshine because
And it's not even that hot today right now.
I was going to say, you bring the sunshine and the heat. I bring the rain.
Oh, heck no. It's breezy out there right now for where we've been.
Before we get into the law, and I would say, I do, you know, I like, it's therapeutic driving, from my house, especially at 4 o'clock up to Bucks County.
Hey, I just got on 676 at 9 a.m.
I know you did. I don't want to mess with her, Meg, because she doing the shows here. I mean, literally, Ted, you can understand why I was like the last guy here, because if I had to walk home, it would take me 15 minutes. But driving, it's a 4.5 minute ride if there's no traffic, you know. So I don't want to mess with this because we'll be doing these shows in Siberia. But recently when they had that issue on 95, remember with the fire? And
yeah, the road.
Oh,
blocks?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a fun ride up, and I think it was pouring. It was. I brought that. It was like never before.
I don't know why you're acting surprised that it was raining. It's always raining when you drive to Bucks County.
So, Kate, if you would remind our listeners about what Files Law does.
Yeah, sir. We're a workers' compensation firm. We serve all of Pennsylvania, though we are based in Lower Bucks County, taking cases from Philadelphia to Pittsburgh. We also handle Social Security disability at times. We're pretty selective on the disability we take, but bread and butter, work comp.
And having said that, Ted, if you would remind our listeners.
Yeah, Fine, Stout & Levy is a Philadelphia personal injury firm that's been in business since my grandfather founded it in 1958. Just a lot of general personal injury, car accidents, fall down cases. Also, we do medical malpractice. We do some workers' comp. We do some products liability, some insurance bad faith. I pretty much do it all.
And having said that, Ted's, his last name is spelled L-E-V-Y.
Yeah, I knew. I did know that.
Okay. But it's, so I was called.
Good spelling.
I got it wrong seven times.
You must have won the spelling.
Wait, how were you spelling?
I'm just going to explain.
That would be my automatic way to spell.
You know, that same year that I got pinned in 47 seconds from the kid from Gillespie, the public school kid that was the top. By the way, he was the top guy. No top. You are not
pinning me unless you're
the top guy. I went to Penn Charter and played for a little Quaker. So our coach's name was Bob Levy, but it was spelled the same way. So that's what I'm getting at. I said it the wrong way a couple times.
Okay.
When Fred, right. when Ted was on.
Fred Levy.
Fred. Your wife's, she's going to think you're lying to her. You didn't have a show here, some guy, Fred Levy. but when Ted was on the show last, and so I, made sure I didn't forget that. And what is the, why it's spelled?
I have no idea. Okay. I honestly couldn't tell you.
Well, I can tell you this. My last name's Doherty. And a lot of people call me Doherty. Yet we have an attorney who does a show with us, Pat Doherty. His name is spelled Doherty. I'm Dougherty. So I've been called, literally speaking, the gamut. But I find that interesting. Let's talk a little bit.
You don't want to talk about last name Files? Come on.
It is
that is a great lawyer name. You could have like
Isn't
a TV
it?
Show.
I did have a my contracts professor in law school. Absolutely loved him. But the first day he just was like, is it fee less? I was like, no, it's just files. Like, it's, you don't have to, got to make it fast, fancier than it is.
It can be if you want it.
I was like, fee less. That's sure. Go ahead.
So, so when we typically have the opportunity to have an outstanding personal injury firm attorney on the broadcast, we talk about the different facets of you know, how, you know, what types of cases might go together, okay? And obviously, you know, it's a lot of people, workers' compensation can be a very, try to navigate it on yourself, and you got yourself a problem. But what is interesting about this particular show is we have two firm owners here, okay? Mm-hmm. Ted, when did your name get put on the mantle?
I finally became a named partner in December.
Congrats. Yeah. That's awesome.
Thank you.
But you've been running the show with no help for 20 years since your grandfather retired?
Hey, I own 20% of the firm. Bob and Dave Fine each own 40%. But, you know, I'm the one in and out of court and hearings every day.
Really?
So I'm the workhorse.
Well, I can tell you that the firm obviously has been around. It's got a great name. Did you always know that you were going to be an attorney coming out of?
No, I just figured it out. I just I sort of was lost my sophomore year of college and just needed a goal. And I decided it was like we had a family practice. I was going to become a lawyer and work there.
Really?
Yeah.
I tell you, Caitlin, when did you?
Junior year of college. I just, again, same. I just decided I didn't want to be a teacher. And I went to a talk about work you can do in like the nonprofit sector, which I obviously didn't end up in, but I was like, oh, law school's cool. So I went and took the LSAT.
Interesting enough, when you know, you pick, you're going to be a lawyer. Ted, you knew you were going to be a personal injury because that was the firm, right? Caitlin, when did you decide? Because your father's a doctor.
My father's a doctor. And we have no lawyers in the family.
No lawyers. Mm-mm. When it's a holiday and you get in an argument, you say, listen, I will take you down.
They don't even try. They're done with me and my rational arguing.
But you know what's interesting? So I am interested a lot of times how you pick your specialty, because there's so many different ones. A lot of times, what was your pathway?
I needed a job in law school, and I ended up at the newly founded Pondley Hockey. And I didn't even know what work comp was, and I loved it. So I just stepped into it by mistake.
So interesting enough, I did a show not long ago with a couple young men who, you know, they're 10, 15 years out of law school, and they were working at the district attorney's office. Okay.
Yep.
And I've heard from a number of people that, you know, that they find some great talent at the DA's mm-hmm. office and the PD's office and all that. But one thing what was amazing, and I can say this, and I will say it on air because they said it on air.
Double
peace.
Air.
Peace.
Double air. You're online.
How's my hair?
You look great.
That's great. Yeah. Cheers. But he mentioned to me, okay, the salary they were getting I guess it was the start. Okay, I have relationships with the city and all that. I don't mm-hmm. mind talking about it because, okay, and it was so unbelievably low. It was like $52,000.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay, I could not believe. How are you going to keep talent?
I got to say, I think a lot of first-year attorneys, unless they're going right into big corporate law, they start pretty low. 52 is pretty low, but I started low. I mean, then you get, at least for me, personal injury, you then got substantial raises because you started low and then you kind of worked your way up. It was almost like residency with doctors. That's at least how I felt with the personal injury side of things. But yeah, I've heard they start real low.
No, definitely. I agree with Caitlin. Like I did not make much money my first year as a mm-hmm. first couple years as a lawyer. I finally, when I was 30, had a breakthrough, and yes. within 2 months of each other, settled one for $775 and $325, and like made, you know, $1.1 million in settlements in like a month, and all of a sudden I'm making money. And
yeah,
just kind of kept up after that.
I agree. It
you walk into
years.
Yeah to your partner, and you're like, listen,
yeah.
But I get that. I get it. I get it. But and I imagine that the guys were when they were talking to me. They were obviously talking early in their careers. Mm-hmm. And any idea how much, I mean, I know that as attorneys, you know, everybody talks. I mean, is there an upside? In other words, is there a, for an ADA, I'm assuming some of them are making over 100, right? I mean,
not by much, I don't think. I think even pretty senior DAs, I would think, make low hundreds.
Yeah, I think you either do it because you love it or you get the experience. I mean, one of the reasons it was easier to hire at our firm for them because, one, they know how to work. I mean, they're just working. And we had a million hearings a day, a million depths a day. So you have to hire someone who's ready to be running around doing a lot of stuff. So I think the experience you get, but also just when you're starting that low, it's kind of easy also to make the transition to PI because then it's like you start low, but with PI, there's really no limit. I mean, you can make as much as you want to make.
Absolutely. So I came up with, you know, and I got shot down because I was on another show but I came up with a solution for that.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear this.
Okay. And it's infuriating. I mean infuriating that you can't do it.
What is it?
Okay. You have everybody has referrals. One of the great things about this show, outstanding attorney, creating relationships. Someday, some unfortunate individual is going to get injured on the job and there's going to be a third party case. And Caitlin is or Ted is going to have the opportunity to say, you know what? I know a work comp attorney or, you know what? I know a PI attorney. And we have the benefit of being able to put great attorneys together and promote individuals. And as attorneys, you know, your referral network is a big part of what you do. This is why you can go to, you know, to Ted Levy and Caitlin Files with a landlord-tenant case, and Caitlin or Ted might say, you know what, that's not what we do, but I can tell you right now, I got a relationship with somebody who's great, who's going to prioritize you because they know fantastic. What I thought was, it should happen anyway without a referral, but when Ted, this is more up your alley in regards to personal injury because a big part of area, you know, is civil sexual assault and crime mm-hmm. victims. A lot of people don't know this. I was one of those people who there's civil part of a lot of criminal cases. Okay, when I heard that, I'm like, who are you suing? The criminal's going to jail. Okay, but then let's put a scenario together. There is a vacant building that's been vacant in a downtrodden area of the city for years. There's no lights in the parking lot, and there's a million different scenarios here, as you know. But they've had, you know, for example, by the way, this is not a stretch. There may have been assaults, robberies, sexual assaults in that parking lot area because it's a walkthrough for years. Now, there's a crime. Obviously, the crime is committed by somebody, and there's a criminal element. That individual, if they hopefully get caught, is there's criminal action there. The district attorneys will handle that. On the other hand, the accomplice in the case, particularly in such a negligent way, because they still haven't fixed the lights. Is the owner of that building, right? Mm-hmm. So now you have a civil situation because that situation and scenario is clearly, even if it only happens once, a negligent party in that situation. So I think the district attorneys have an obligation to send that to a civil attorney so that victim can get maximum justice.
I agree. I think it'd be great if we could communicate more with the DA's office and work more with them on that.
And the funny thing about it is this. They just can't get a referral fee now. My point to you is this, and I would say this, I could care less what anybody said back to me, because ultimately speaking, when everything's down, they're going to go, I guess, you're right, we're just not allowed. Okay? But they should be able to make a referral fee for sending that to a civil that case because there's an accomplice there. Okay, that owner of that building might as well be involved in the thing in the situation, right?
Because you have a responsibility to keep your property safe.
Exactly,
it's a public property.
Now, even in a like a slip and fall in front of a house, okay, you have you know, you have some leeway, right? If it rains, it's an ice storm at 2 o'clock, and at 3 o'clock, there's snow on the ground, and all somebody slips and falls. You still have, like, there's an amount of time that's reasonable, right? You're not negligent.
And in Philadelphia, there is a sidewalk statute that's 6 hours. I mean, that's not mm-hmm. the end all and be all. You don't have, it doesn't, 6 hours doesn't have to elapse to have a claim, but you will have, like, the negligence per se, if, you know, after 6 hours that they didn't clear the sidewalk.
Okay. So what I'm saying is, okay, you have a parking lot, okay? It's well lit. It's one big light, but it's big, right? It goes out at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. The incident happened. That may be negligence by you know, the word of law. I don't know what it is, and I know you do too. But my point is, I'm not saying go after that landlord where it was an act of God. You're a good landlord, and it just happened right there, or the homeowner that, you know, in the middle of the blizzard can't get out there, and somebody falls an hour into this thing. But I'm saying that you have a clearly negligent situation.
I'll tell you, you know what's actually been a, you know, God's gift to personal injury lawyers on, like, outdoor premises cases? Google Maps. Like, because otherwise you get the whole thing. Well, like, you know, it's just a small defect. How did you establish notice? Because I looked and I have an image capture dated 2021 and it's there. Why didn't you repair it?
That's smart. Yeah. Google Maps makes sense.
Yeah. So my point is, you want to keep good DAs. Okay. Yeah. You want to be able to, you want to be able to, you keep integrity process, but all that, right? All that, but really it's about maximum justice.
Yeah.
That individual, you know, mm-hmm. you sit there as a district attorney, and we've had a number of people and we can't take back what happened to the individual, but the justice of delivering a, you know, so it doesn't happen to somebody else is great. But yes, you can in some cases.
Yeah,
you can help further. And that individual who now may be not able to go to work or go out of their house, whose life is absolutely destroyed, okay, but they still have to go to work and make a living and maybe even go through that same damn parking lot.
I had something, you know, sort of similar. It was actually an interesting one. I represented a woman who got injured in a hotel. We sued the hotel from an act of a third party. So there was another woman who, like, I don't know what went on or whether this, you know, or, I mean, it seemed to me like it was prostitution. This woman kept trying to get a room, be denied, and her boyfriend was supposed to call it in, but she was inebriated and had a vodka bottle on her, sitting in the lobby for hours, multiple times being denied the room. And then she hit my client in the head with a vodka bottle, and my client Ooh. Had a pretty serious, like, traumatic brain injury. I got a good settlement on that case.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
That's okay. So I don't want to segue like this.
Oh, let's hear where we're going from the prostitution case.
Okay. Wow. I owned a nightclub for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And we would get slip and falls and mm-hmm. after about 10 or 12 years since, you know, I am the insured, okay? I would get these calls. And, of course, what was my attorney's name? Because I had him on the show a couple years ago. Great guy. Drew Malik. Okay, Drew, a great attorney, great guy. But, you know, often the bearer of bad news, you know, like mm-hmm. when we had incidents at the club, we had a big staff. Nobody tried harder than us. We were there 13 years, okay, and a massive spot, okay, from 2002 to 2014. And it was nerve-wracking because you don't only get you know, the lawsuit, but you get the citation from the police, right? So I remember there was you can go through, and we spent more money on security than you can shake a stick at. So, you know, we're going to talk about dram shop. You ever do any dram shop?
I've done some dram shop. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to make this sound condescending, but I'm going to educate you. No, but here's the thing. But there are periods of time where you just have bad luck. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of those periods of time where we had like three or four weeks in a row, and I felt like I couldn't get out. You know, and we, like I said, we're spending more money on security, and we had no steps until we put our VIP in. But when we opened up, there were no steps, so you weren't tripping. I mean, you weren't falling down steps, and but it was like five minutes left, like 5 minutes left, and we closed at 3:00, but you could stay till and we'll get you out at 3:30. It was after hours, and it was in Center City between Spring Garden and Cow Hill, right off the 95 exit. And I'll never forget it. A guy, this leads into the second part. A guy, this is what our investigation said, and the police told me, a guy walked up to a girl at like twenty after, like we were just about to turn the lights on. We might have even, and he asked her what her name was, and she said, "My name is Get Out of My Face," in a different language, right? And, you know, he said again, you know, "What's your name?" "My name is Out of My Face." Okay. He said it one more time and he hit her. Right.
What?
Now, oh yeah, absolutely. We got him locked up, all that stuff. That was, you know, I mean, of course we had security, real good security, but on the lawsuit, here I am. Right. Mm-hmm. And luckily she was okay. And we had a couple bottle incidents, but after several years of that, okay, and I mean like several is like 14, 12, 13, at the end of the road, I'll never forget, Drew Mallett called me up. And we had a really good safety record. I mean, that's why we're there 14 years. We didn't mess around at all. Like we have incident reports, we have all that. We were getting hit with a lot of slip and falls at one point that we didn't have incidents for. And I did more depositions on the defense side. That's why when we have a defense attorney on the broadcast, you know, they all walk in nervous. They're like, "Oh, these, you know, we're gonna." I know exactly where they're going, right? So Drew calls me up one day, and he's a nice guy. He's an awesome attorney, and he said, "We got another one." I'm like, "Oh man!" And so, evidently, some. Yeah, what happened? He said the woman got hit with a bottle. Somebody hit her over the head with a bottle. Exactly what you just said. Probably the same incident, Ted. So he said, so I'm in the middle of this. I got my manager who handles all that stuff for me. And I said, "Do we have any incident reports on this?" Right. And we may have. And he said, do you know what happened?" And I said to him, "Sure, I know what happened. Of course I do." He said, "Well, what happened?" I said, "Well, she came in the club. I went immediately and got a bottle of full liquor and smacked her right over the head with it," right? And of course, Drew Malik is like, "What? What?" I'm like, "Of course I did, Drew, because my name's on the damn," you know, like I'm like being sarcastic here, right, Drew? I mean, you know, I got really like so you do the best you can in that situation, in those situations to protect people. By the way, any listeners out there, I did not hit the woman over there. I'm just
thanks
saying.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. My name was on the lawsuit, okay, of course. Now, 99% of the time, I would get thrown out. But it was a very stressful type area. And I was not one to sit there and I'm not trying not to get justice there. I'm sure we locked the guy up or whatever. But those incidents jump out like there's no tomorrow. But in that type of situation, you know, much like, you know, the situation in the parking lot, okay, who knows if the perpetrator has any assets, so they're coming after, you know, the big guy.
Yeah, you know what can be good cases, Joe? Any case where somebody gets beaten up by security or a bouncer, because it's interesting. Almost any other profession, there's no respondeat superior, so you're out of luck suing the employer. But if it's somebody who might need to physically interact with a customer, they need training on using the least amount of force possible. And if they're pummeling somebody, there's going to be liability or the restaurant or whatever.
Oh, yeah. My brother and I, it was us and some other partners, but at the beginning of our conversation in our career there, the number one argument between me and him was security. We were inexperienced, and we were hiring guys that might have a track record. I mean, but really, we needed an experienced manager, okay, somebody who knew everybody. and we eventually got one. He was incredible. But a lot of times, Caitlin Fowles will come in here and beat up security if they don't let it right.
I wasn't even alive when Joe was running this.
But, yeah, we never had enough security when Caitlin came in, and we'd have to get on the horn, get me, call Club Deco and get everybody
Sounds
over here from Shampoo.
Right.
Right. You were definitely not alive when Shampoo.
I was definitely not around for Shampoo.
Club Egypt.
Oh, my God.
So, that was a big deal. Faulty security is. And we were very, very, very strict. And I got in an argument with a pro football player who played for the Eagles one time because one of his friends evidently got in a fight with our security guard. I was trying to get to the bottom of it, but alcohol impeded this gentleman from allowing me to do it. I'm saying, listen, because we had really strict. Here's an interesting thing. When one of the police officers from the 6th District retired, he was the first individual to get the security job at Xfinity Live. And he called me up and he said, can you work with me in putting together the security protocols? Because he was a cop, he was a good cop, but he had never worked in club security, which is, there's a ton of different things. It's different than being a police officer, but your point is well taken. And since I started doing talk radio, and this is one I'll go to Caitlin Fowles for, our show host, I ran into one lawyer on our shows that sued me, and it was funny, right? I mean, it was funny. We didn't know one another, but he told me, and he represented my own guy. It was the only time I got sued by my own employee, and the guy was a great guy, and I'm friends with him today.
The attorney?
Yeah, no,
the
security guard.
Okay.
So these security guards, and this guy was one of the best. He had one of those bounty, they would go out and find, they would go get criminals and individuals that were, out there hiding from the law or whatever.
Bounty hunter?
Bounty hunter, right. So he's phenomenal. He was with me for all 13 years. We were 13 years downtown one year in our neighborhood. But he was working. He'll remain nameless, but he only worked for us at this club one day a month, okay? Now, because his company was just exploding. He was doing really well. And they want to work under the table.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was 15, 20 years, and this was about 12 years ago. It was on New Year's Eve. He got hit with a stanchion over the head. Man, and he got belted. I knew I was now he's my friend, but I went to the hospital, and I knew I was in trouble when his wife wouldn't talk to me or never.
Now, yes.
Ultimately speaking, I knew what you tell me that scenario. Somebody's working, they make the decision that they want to. It's they're only working one night. They don't want to mess with. We have workers' compensation insurance
mm-hmm.
for everybody, but he's working under the table. How does that? What are the rules there?
You just got to be able to prove wages. So it's okay to work under the table. We're not the IRS. So you might be in trouble with the IRS if you haven't paid taxes on it, but that doesn't come into play with work comp. So you just have to be able to prove wages. So if he testified, hey, I made this amount on this day, and you didn't contest it, that's it.
Well, he ended up going, there was a third party case or something like that. He only did it like a handful of times. He would come, because he worked there full time for a long time, but his company, and so the few times, and it was New Year's Eve, so, he wanted the night.
It couldn't have been that big of a case because his average weekly wage would have been like $20.
Right. Right. Well, the point is,
because he worked one day a month.
But I thought I was in huge trouble, right? I mean,
maybe the medical bills.
Yeah.
I mean, he got hit over the head.
Yeah.
Concussion, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and so, but I think he ended up with a third party case, he settled that case.
Yeah.
And we hadn't talked during that time. It was about a year. I think it was Ted Levy that represented him, and that's why we're here, Ted.
Sounds about right.
But how do you investigate that, Ted?
Investigate what? Like if there's a third party case?
Yeah. Let's say Caitlin Files calls you and says, Joe opened another nightclub up and you know it's probably, you know.
And his security is
I've represented people who fell in the building of their employer, but the building was owned by like some management company and you sue the management company. So it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. I think it's important if you think it's only a workers' comp case, you know, think again and really investigate. Because, you know, there could be a lot more money to be made for the client.
So what ends up happening, you know, what if the two of you are working together and it ends up being a third party case, say you get the case first, mm-hmm. Caitlin, where do we go from there?
So if they told me that they were the security guy. Even
if it wasn't the security situation, but in any work situation where you think, it could be a security situation where obviously a security guard gets assaulted by somebody else or whatever, but you get that case, it's work comp, he's working, it's all, you know, he's been there a long time, there's mm-hmm. a real work comp case. Like everybody else in my place, including the guy who got injured, you know, for 99.9% of his career. So you get that, you see there's a third party element. How do you and Ted work together?
I just punt it over to him. So I'll just text him and say, hey, I have a case either, you know, they were injured, but I think a third party controls the sidewalk, or they were using a product that was defective. You can sue the products company. Or in this case, hey, a third party came in to their job site and hurt them. Can you review it? I don't typically ever say you don't have a third party case. I defer to the personal injury attorney because they're the experts. I don't know.
I mean, I once had a good settlement. I think it was something like $350,000 in a case where a woman was, you know, some woman who was from South America, Spanish speaking only, sort of worked through a labor broker who set her up at this one job. And it was like, it was very law specific about how much control the actual employer, who she was not technically an employee of, exerted over her. I beat their motion for summary judgment and we were about to try it. And they came up with a bunch of money. And this was a woman who was working for them at the time. And it was more than just a comp claim.
Well, so it was also possibly a misclassification of worker situation.
Well, yeah, she worked for a labor broker who was her actual attorney, but you run into the borrowed servant doctrine where they're going to be even if they're not technically employed by them, they're going to be deemed an employee. It's like this very fact specific test about how much control the employer exerts over them. And I thought what actually really helped is they designated, like, with different hats, the different workers, depending on whether they were employed by them or not. And another thing was, after this woman was injured and had her foot crushed by a forklift, they, the technically employer who was owned the site ignored her and she was taken home by her own people.
So Caitlin, how do you deal with a misclassification? There's a lot of people, we have had issues with that in labor where, you know, you have these individuals, whoever they are, they could be undocumented. But even if there aren't, if they aren't undocumented, that, you know, the employer may be a predatory employer that's saying, you know, you are a subcontractor.
Oh yeah, all the time.
But like Ted said, you know, there was arguments about, you know, what time are did I have to be and what roles that? How do you handle that?
So it's all about control, again, in workers' compensation. And it's really, as Ted said, fact specific. There's no just like blanket, oh, you had this, so you're an employee. Oh, you had that, you're an independent contractor. There's all this case law about what you look at about control and everything. And then ultimately, it's up to the judge. I mean, if the judge, that judge, sitting next to that judge, they can decide it two different ways. So I always, if it's a case where I'm like, I'm really not sure how it's going to come down, I make sure that there's a third party case going at the same time. Because if we get to the end of the work comp case and then they're like, nope, you're an independent contractor, we just wasted 2 years without referring out to a third party. I do the same when it's like, I'm not sure which jurisdiction. So I'll punt the Jersey attorney as well and say, hey, we're working this up for PA, but this could very well come back as an NJ case. So you want to keep an eye on this as well, that you might need to bring it.
The communication in that situation between the attorneys, okay, and you know, how important is that, number one, and really almost in a joint matter of not just communications but investigating?
I mean, I think it's crucial because we really work together. If, you know, you want, you know, them to the comp attorney to cooperate with you and make sure you get updates and everything going on in the comp claim, and also if the comp attorney gets a, you know, if there's a big there's a big workers' comp lien that really helps settle a third-party case for a lot of money.
And when there's a dispute there, when it's a potential misclassification, does that mess up the can somebody actually get awarded workers' comp by the judge in a decent amount of time, or when there's a dispute when it comes to misclassification? That means, of course, that the employer's not paying the workers' comp. They're saying that they don't deserve
it. Right. They're disputing it. Yeah, we can bifurcate the issue. So in the beginning, if we start it and I'm like, listen, I'm not paying this medical deposition and all of these fees and taking a year and a half to get a decision, if the judge is just going to come down and say, you weren't even an employee, so I'm not going to consider any of the, even the rest of what you litigated. So in the beginning, we'll say, judge, can we bifurcate this issue? We'll get it decided in a couple months to decide, instead of saying, you know, let's handle this issue and pay, you know, $6,000 to Rothman for a deposition, which is nonsense. So in the beginning, we'll ask the judge, can we bifurcate on course and scope or classification of the employee, get a decision on that if we should even proceed with the next steps.
Okay. And does that mean sometimes you're going to bring an employment attorney into a case, does the PI firm fight for the, when you're dealing with the misclassification?
You don't bring any attorney in. I mean, it's really the facts. So I don't need another attorney, to help or anything. It's a work comp issue for me, for my side of things. And then once it's decided, if it's not work comp, it's, handing it on the plate to a personal injury attorney. Hey, independent contractor, have at it.
Ted, when you had mentioned the types of cases that the firm handles in regards to personal injury, what is the wide array? Because a personal injury, workers' comp is such a specialized area. Mm-hmm. That I've heard a lot of people say, I tried dabbling in it, but it's a nightmare.
It's not a fun dabble.
It's not a good dabble. but in personal injury, there's a wide array there. What in the firm, what do you handle?
The bread and butter are going to be either car accidents or premises liability cases, any case where somebody got injured on somebody's property. I mean, there's certain cases that are kind of expert intensive, or a lot of work, like medical malpractice or products liability. I'm definitely interested into them, but it needs to be the right case. It needs to be a big enough case. And for instance, medical malpractice cases, they have a requirement for you to have a doctor review the records pre-suit, and you have to file a certificate of merit saying a doctor has reviewed the records in that specialty and found that there's a reasonable probability of negligence. So you're committing thousands of dollars before pre-suit before you even filed. And any products case, I mean, you might need to disassemble and test the product. You're going to have to pay an engineer. So the kind of cases where I can just, get them in, sign them up are going to be car accidents and premises liability cases. And, that's where sort of the bread and butter comes from.
So typically speaking, when you think about workers' comp and not dabbling in it, I'm pretty sure MedMal's another area where you're not meddling.
I was just thinking MedMal's wild.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't have gone into it because my father would have disowned me, but
right.
It's just such a aggressive commitment. Like if you do MedMal, it's wild to me the amount of money spent in MedMal cases.
Right. And the fact that, how long can a MedMal case last?
I mean, usually you're going to be on like a 2-year discovery track and you probably waited a year before that to file. So probably 3 years.
I heard when Ted Levy walks in, they just empty the coffers right there.
Settlement.
Next. Just cut the check. but that's it. I mean, that is the conversation where there's a lot of similarities in regards to client expectations, right? Talk about, when it comes to when you get a client, Caitlin, I'm assuming, and I know it because we've done many shows, but, you get cases at all different times, okay?
Oh,
it just
yeah.
happened yesterday. It happened 2 months ago. It maybe happened a year ago. Mm-hmm. Can you eyeball a case and say, okay, depending upon what, if they're getting paid or if they just got shut down or if they've never gotten paid, the scenario of when somebody walks in the office, reading the facts, and then talking to them about the ebbs and flows of, you're not a mind reader, you can't guarantee anything, who could, but you have a good idea of what that looks like because that first conversation with somebody who's lost and been beat up. Talk about that and the importance of it. And then we'll go to Ted and ask the same question.
Yeah, sure. So I always defer to just brutal honesty about what's going to happen. I'm very clear that I cannot predict a thing. I don't know what's going to happen with their case. I'm not in control of anything the employer or the insurance company is doing. You know, we have options, file penalties and file stuff, but, you know, I can't control protecting their job, getting their wages paid. We can just fight. But I think overall, these years of all these cases I've litigated, you do start to get a feel. So I'm like, well, you're probably not going to start getting paid. And yes, I am. My employer said they're going to take care of me. Okay. Call me back in 2 weeks when you get a denial in your hand, because that's what's coming down the road here.
Right.
Because you can just tell me about the conversations you have with an employer. Tell me about the insurance company conversations you've had so far. Oh, you didn't fill out an incident report? Oh, they won't report this to the work comp? You're not going to get paid.
How often does that happen?
I would say
because they trusted their employer.
Oh, they always trust their employer. And then they trust, my favorite is their nurse case manager. And how annoyed you get with panel doctors, that's how annoyed I get with nurse case managers. Oh, she's so nice. She's taking care of me. I'm like, she's talking to the doctor beside you saying, when you leave the room, when can they go back to work as soon as possible?
Yeah, it is a shame, especially when people do the best they can. They don't give you the trophy for getting injured and sucking it up.
No.
Yeah, they don't.
No, I had a client yesterday who called me, and she must have forgotten the conversation we had, but she signed up. She has an accepted work injury. I told her to go wherever she wants. As long as the doctor takes work comp, go wherever you want. There's this horrible misconception that the insurance company lies all the time saying you have to go to their doctor. It's not true. But so she went to this doctor. I'm not going to say his name. I can't stand him. I've seen him around so much. He's terrible to injured workers, but he's a very popular doctor out in Bucks County. And she went to him, even though I told her not to, because she remembered that the insurance company told her at one point that she had to see this doctor. So she came back after the appointment. She told me what had happened. He was a total jerk. He was horrible to her, just completely condescending, told her there was nothing wrong with her. She has broken ribs, told her the ribs were from before. Come on.
Pre-existing situation.
Literally fell onto, ridiculous. So I'm like, all right, don't go back to him. She's like, I don't have to go back to him. I was like, I told you you didn't have to go to him in the first place. She's like, but don't I always have to see the insurance company doctors? I'm like, no, it's just horrible, horrible misconception.
Well, that is, you know, probably happened so much. Ted, we got a couple minutes left. In your area, it could also, you know, the ebbs and flows are different, but setting expectations for a client, the importance of that. You know, so they don't think, well, the McDonald's guy, got spilled coffee. I'm going to get $1 million and they're going to settle in 6 months or even 2 weeks. Talk about the importance of setting expectations.
Yeah, clients do come in with unreasonable expectations. I mean, that McDonald's case that was cited as like the, you know, absolute like justice gone awry, the runaway jury system. This poor lady had third-degree burns and almost died.
Skin
she
grafting.
She spent like weeks in the hospital. She needed multiple surgeries. McDonald's was serving their coffee at like 190 degrees. They had thousands of documented burns, didn't do anything about it. And she actually, after the judge reduced the award, walked away with less than $1 million.
I heard
that. So it was nothing like it's portrayed in the media, but you know, people hear about like, oh, this woman got $1 million for something small and they weren't even hurt. And I, you know, nobody gets seven figures if they're not hurt, ever.
Right. So, but also setting expectations.
Yeah,
so
no, you have
understand.
To talk to your client, you know, right off the bat. You know, when they're very unreasonable about settlements and you know, or money being offered, you have to explain stuff to them.
Okay, so how much out of pocket costs? We got 2 minutes. Does it cost to retain both of you?
You know that answer, zero.
I know. I know, but some listener may not
zero.
Know.
$0 for both. I'm speaking for Ted.
$0
for both firms.
Contingency fee agreement. No out-of-pocket cost. Yep. And that goes for getting the consultation and if they retain you, correct?
Yeah, I mean, unless, you know, if there's no recovery, I'm not going to charge the client. If we lose money on the case, we eat it.
Yep. And that's
the, yeah, as long as there's no, like, crazy fraud going on, yeah, we don't charge you.
Contact information, Ted, if somebody wants to get in touch?
You can call my office, Feinstein Levy, 215-665-0100. You can also email me. It's TLEVY, at feinandstoud.com, all spelled out.
Awesome.
LEVY, Joe.
Levy. Levy. Caitlin Files, if you would.
Sure. So 215-987-6452. Website is filesinjurylawyers.com, and we do have an active Instagram, Facebook at Files Law Office, and now TikTok, so watch out.
Yeah.
We're on the top.
You see this good-looking guy, you'll know who it is. I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Files Law Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. I want to thank TJ, our producer.
Thank you, TJ.
Thank you.
Ted Levy, of course, for being our guest, and our host.
Thank you,
Caitlin
Ted.
Files.
Yes, always a pleasure.
On behalf of everybody, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening.